Welcome to Blue Collar BS, a podcast that busts the popular myth that we can't find good people, highlighting how the different generations of today, the boomers, Gen X, millennials, and Gen Z, are redefining work so that the industrial revolution that started in the U.S. stays in the U.S.
Hey everyone, welcome back to this episode of the Blue Collar BS podcast. I am your co-host Brad, along with
Steve.
Perfect, Mr. Doyle. Perfect. So, full disclosure, Mr. Doyle, the millennial guy, is feeling a little under the weather, but he did show up.
I did. Show
up today.
I didn't pull the millennial move and not show up,
which is some Gen X characteristics. So, thank you for doing that, Mr. Doyle. I appreciate you showing up. And
yeah, I'll take my lumps today.
Well, but so I think that's an important topic.
Yeah.
Right? Because there are those perceptions, there are those things. And, you know, for today, you know, this episode's probably airing sometime in March. We're here at the end of January recording.
Right.
Lots of things are going on with the new administration. Businesses coming back to.
Oh, yeah, I thought this wasn't a political show.
It's not, but there's a lot of things going on there. Reofficing of businesses coming back in play. We got major corporations here in Wisconsin that are trying to reoffice. You know, so I guess what I want to kind of banter around today is the fact that if you can build flexibility in your workforce and have that remote opportunity, you may be able to come up with some amazing talent and replace some of your, maybe it'll level up your talent pool.
Yep.
And still potentially reduce your wages, because I think there's going to be some trade-off for that freedom of working from home versus what I thought was going to happen when COVID kind of ended. Was I thought we weren't going to see the high wages go through the roof. I was wrong. I'll probably be wrong about this too, but I think you may be able to get some folks now that are used to flexibility, trade time for dollars, or flexibility for dollars.
Right.
What do you think about that, Mr. Doyle, besides just shaking your head, nodding your head?
Yeah. I mean, let's face it. If to be in the office or not be in the office, I'm just going to say it right now. If you don't trust your employees, why in the hell did you hire them in the first place? We'll just get that out right now and we can talk on that. Do I think everybody needs to be in the office? No. But there are times when, yeah, there's, you can have a lot more teamwork and a lot more camaraderie by being in the office.
A lot more learning too, opportunities and sharing, just listening to the phone calls, hearing the bitching and complaining after the manager meeting and everybody walking off all angry or celebrating something, or, you know, just the things that you are able to pick up in an office environment or a facility environment. So many more learning opportunities too.
Yeah, there are.
To create wisdom, right? And and we've talked about this on the show before about knowledge versus wisdom, and knowledge is great because I can acquire it and I can use this little device here in our hands to acquire knowledge.
Right.
But the application of that knowledge and knowing it and recalling it is where the wisdom comes in.
I don't disagree with all the camaraderie, the teamwork, and all the learning that goes on. And there's just, you actually feel more connected the more you actually interact face to face, toe to toe with someone, than you do if you're doing Zoom, doing things online, doing things remotely. You know, and there's ways that we've had to figure out, how do we feel like we're part of the team when we're thousands of miles away? It's nice, but there's nothing like being face to face with somebody.
So what would you suggest for our manufacturing, construction, trade businesses to think about some of those positions that could go remote, that we're going to have some folks maybe aging out, or maybe some folks that have wanted to work remote, but they've put up with it and come to the office? What are some of the things that they can do as leaders and organizations to ensure that they have the flexibility to pick and choose to find the right person versus just being hard line, hell fucking no, you're coming into the office and we're going to watch your car pull in and out of the parking lot every time and make sure you put all those damn hours in.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that's transparency. It's transparency both ways and trust. Again, going back to my comment earlier, if you don't trust your employees, why are you hiring them?
So All right. You're a trust guy, sort of, you know, trust training guy. Different.
Yeah, I'm certified in it. Yep. Yep.
So what are those key things that you need to have in order to create that trust from
clarity? Clarity is number one. Right. And oftentimes we find
clarity for our audience.
Clarity in the terms that we're talking here is being crystal clear about what's at stake or what is expected. So when we talk clarity, it's
okay, so let's go through this. I expect you to come on the show and talk for 20 to 25 minutes. Is that clarity?
There's ambiguity in it. What are we going to talk about? How are we going to talk about it? Am I going to show up or not show up? Am I going to be a dick or not be a dick? All of those things come into play. So, you know, the one thing that we both have is from a clarity standpoint is we both expect each other to be authentic, be who we really are. So I don't need to say all those other fucking things because, you know, it falls into that umbrella. So, but for some people, they need that level. They need to dig down and layer down and really understand what are those expectations? Are we really crystal clear on what those expectations are? Because we all have quote unquote assumptions, and we know what happens when we start assuming stuff, right? We make an ass out of each other. So that's not how the saying goes, but I don't really care right now. So the point is how we show up for each other is what really matters. And the words that we say, what we mean behind it, there's no underhandedness or things like that. It's truly just being genuine with this is what our expectations are. And we really need to have that open transparency, not just with other people, but also ourselves as well. And really ask that question, why are we forcing people to come back to the office? And are we being truly honest with ourselves? Like, yeah, they're going to build all these other things. Or is it truly the fact of, I think somebody's stealing from me and I want to be able to watch them leave every single day. I want to watch them when they come in. I want to watch them when they leave. And I want to be able to walk by them and know that they are actually working because I don't trust them when they're at home. They're out screwing around.
Kind of went off the beaten path there a little bit, but that's
I did.
Okay.
Yes, I did.
We started out with clarity and went down the, okay, I got an asshole for a boss who doesn't trust anybody through those things.
Well, but that goes back to the
trust. I want to circle back to that trust piece.
Yes, too, exactly. Right? Yep.
So clarity, great. Set expectations, show up for the show, record. Great. Fantastic. I can have all these results-based expectations and be very clear on what those expectations are. That still doesn't create trust between me and you.
Correct. It does not.
So how do we create that trust, though, from that perspective, right? Where does trust build from? Because I know many leaders who go out and clients want, right? I've set the expectations. Okay, cool. But how did you set the expectations?
Correct.
And what did you do with those expectations when they were met or weren't met? How did you go about communicating those expectations? Lots of different things there. So I don't know that, yes, clarity is part of it, but how do we get to that level of vulnerability trust that is what we're ultimately looking for? That, as one of my former colleagues, guy that worked for me for a bunch of years, Pete Zimmerman, would always say, their job is to make sure the quarterback doesn't get dirty. Right? My staff members True. Took that approach of, hey, we're not going to let you get dirty. As long as you're there to help us and keep us from getting run over, we're going to make sure we're going to do everything we can for you.
Right.
To put you in the best spot, because if you're leading us, you're going to take us to a better spot.
Yep.
Than not. And
right.
It's some of that ambiguity of creating that trust that is hard to define, but mm-hmm. you know, it is vitally important. You know, when you have that landscaper that might have five crews out there right now, going through, or snowplows or whatever that is.
Right.
How do you create that level of trust to know that they're doing the right thing and they're, you know, wet means wet, not wet means I didn't right. go there 2 hours ago to go put down more salt.
Right. But you said something very key right there. You said something to the fact that you know, I did, you know, doing what I said, or, you know, something along those lines. And that's where trust really starts to happen, is when you are you or anyone else, the words that are coming out of your mouth, you're actually living by them. You're not saying them and speaking out your ass on the other side and doing something different than what you've said. But that, again, that comes back to that level of clarity. How do we start to inspire that trust? We do what we say we're going to do day in, day out. We start to carry ourselves with that. We start to be that person that provides that level of detail with others. Some people might not like that. They might feel like they lose that upper hand. But damn it, at the end of the day, if you're not holding yourself to those higher standards, why do you think employees should follow you?
Okay, so let's follow that along for a minute. So I got a leader. We'll go back to the landscaping company. Maybe has five crews, a bunch of guys out snow plowing, whatever it might be. So maybe he's got 10 employees, five crews, two-man crews going out there. He is holding that owner, that business owner, he or she is holding themselves to the standard. I said I was going to do this. What about from the employee side or the individual contributor side to be able to say, okay, great, to get that reciprocated, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the side of compassion, because we actually have to think beyond ourselves. The leaders actually have to think beyond themselves and put other people before them. So as a leader, we can expect and demand those things. But if we're not walking in the shoes of those other people that work for us or not, we don't care about them. We don't genuinely show true compassion for them. Why should they care? They're just going to show up for a paycheck.
So what are some examples of showing that compassion, right? We create the clarity. How do we go about showing the compassion when things are jacked up from the owner's viewpoint, right? Because it's they'll never do it, right? They'll never do it as well as I can. So therefore, I'll just take care of it. How come they just can't do the extra thing that might not be clearly defined in the expectations, but, you know, we're just going to do that extra thing.
You mean you want them to read your mind and guess what you want them to do?
Well, isn't that what most of life is about from a leadership perspective in many organizations?
Categorically, probably.
Right. I mean, so let's just trying to keep that real there, right?
Yep. Yep. I mean, things that you can do from truly showing compassion, it's starts with just having a freaking discussion with people. Before we make mandates of you need to return to the office, let's just sit down and have a conversation. Does it truly make sense? Before we make wide sweeping gestures and yeah, this is what needs to happen. Why can't we just have a sit down conversation with people face to face?
Because they're not in the fucking office, you idiot.
Invite him to coffee. Nobody said you can't go fucking meet him.
No, that's not how that works.
How it fucking works.
I got to pay for mileage. What the hell are you talking about?
I don't
about?
Give a shit.
Now you got mileage reimbursement to deal with and vacation issues and whose time is this really on and yada, yada, yada.
I mean, when it makes sense, you sit down and have a conversation. If you're thousands of miles away, okay, you can pick up the phone and ring someone, or sometimes it's honestly better to jump on like a Zoom call, a Teams call, Skype them, whatever you want to do, FaceTime them, I don't care. But look the person in the face, look them right in the eye, and have a genuine conversation with them. Yeah, I see you. I see you. But when we can do that, we can actually sit down, we can listen to them. You know, we can start to appreciate the conversation that we're having, the connection that we're having. We're going to be present for them because we're having that conversation.
I just had a client who had an employee give him his notice.
Mm-hmm.
Lives out of state. Kind of had the question of what to do next. What's going on? Can we keep him, not keep him, different things? And I'm like, I don't know. It's about you keeping him. I think it's more about you understanding why he's departing. And I would urge you to make the drive down to his place versus telling him to come to you, because it's going to show a different level of opportunity.
Exactly.
A different level of things. And he goes, well, we've never done that before. I said, I understand you've never done it before, but I'm going to guarantee you, you will get far more information out of that meeting or day and a half that you're with him there than having him come into the office, feel like he's being judged and doesn't want to be there. So right. Go take the trip.
Yep.
If you can, to go have that meaningful conversation. He got back and he's like, yeah, I got far more information than I ever would have had he come back at coming to the office.
Exactly. So, I mean, when we take that time to actually sit down and freaking listen to people where they are, where they're at, a lot of stuff can change and it can actually make your business thrive in ways you've not thought of before. But you got to pull your head out of your ass and suck it up, Cupcake, and actually do what needs to be done. It's not easy.
Suck it up.
See what happens when I'm not feeling
you're taking drugs.
I know, right?
All right, and it's legal in Michigan, so it's okay.
Not those kind. Not taking those kind. That's that, the acetaminophen kind.
Perfect. Still had to show your driver's license, though.
Yep.
Oh. So do you think that there is an opportunity for wage pressures to decline with the people leaving and maybe trading time for money or flexibility for money or freedom for money? Do you think that's a possibility here in 25, 26 or not? Or
I think it's all a negotiation, honestly, with depending on the speed at which you want to hire someone, you're going to pay for it. Right. If you're saying I want this now and not willing to have the conversation, you're going to pay for it in one way or another, whether it's going to be through making a rash decision and hiring somebody you shouldn't or overpaying for someone. I mean, seen that for years where people are being consistently overpaid for underperformance. Why? Because we got to hire somebody now. And we're not actually spending the time to actually figure out what do I really need in this role? Right. So do I see as people, you know, mandates coming that you need to return to the office? I think people are going to take advantage of that to say, okay, you want me to come to the office? It's going to cost you extra now. That's where I see it going.
You think it's going to go up for those that are going in? Do you think it may go down for those that are going to have the flexibility? Do you think we have a trade-off for having the flexibility and freedom versus not?
I think it'll be put more on as a quote unquote bonus for people to come into the office rather than a wage increase. It'll be a one-time hit on payroll or on the books versus an annual increase over time. I think if companies, I mean, this is the capitalist society, right? Versus individual capitalism, business capitalism, you're going to always look for, hey, what are the ways that we can minimize this impact? And if I don't have to pay somebody extra in their wages and I can take a one-time hit, that's better for me in the long run as a business. Now, as an individual, six of one, half a dozen of the other. If you're positioning yourself where I need the money now, you're going to take it and you're going to try to figure out how I can create that one-time bonus structure, if you will. But then you may settle for a less of a salary. And that salary, if it's lower, it benefits the business. There's ways to figure out how to compromise that. Don't take as much bonus. Get more in your paycheck. Because over time, your annual increases, that's what your annual increases are based on. They're not based on your one-time bonus.
Correct.
That's what people don't think about.
Okay. Well, we'll see what happens. My last prediction was wrong. My guess is this one's probably wrong too, but I could easily see it happening where some folks will put a value on that half hour drive every day, that 45 minute drive every day, whatever it might be, or the fact that they might have to, maybe they left their home state where they used to work, knowing that they could work from anywhere, went someplace else to be closer to family or something else or better weather conditions. And now they're going to be saying, nope, our policy is now back in the office. You're going to have to move back or not.
Yeah, and you're going to have to move back on your own because we're not paying for that.
Or correct. or I don't, and now they got to go find something else.
Right.
I think there's going to be a lot of turmoil here in 2025, but I also think that there's, for the blue collar guy and girl that might think that they can't afford premium talent, if you have the flexibility, I believe you're going to have some great opportunity here in 25 to either find that employee that you've been reluctant to hire.
Yep.
Or be able to upskill positions that you have been frustrated with for the last 2 or 3 years.
Right.
That's my take.
Mm. I see. Not a bad take.
So, Mr. Doyle, until our next episode of the Blue Collar BS, you have a wonderful day. Get better with that cough. And
yep.
Thanks for showing up, Mr. Gen X. I appreciate you.
Oh, finally, we acknowledge. Yes. Thank you, Brad.
That was the compassion part. I didn't
mean it. Yeah, it was. I don't know how heartfelt it was, but I felt it.
Oh, no. It was heartfelt.
Yeah.
See you later, sir.
Thank you for listening to Blue Collar BS, brought to you by Vision Forward Business Solutions and Professional Business Coaching, Inc. If you'd like to learn more on today's topic, just reach out to Steve Doyle or myself, Brad Herta. Please like, share, rate, and review this show, as feedback is the only way we can get better. Let's keep blue-collar businesses strong for generations to come.